Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The White Sox are playing a baseball game here in just a little bit. Sox will be starting one up with the Cardinals. The White Sox just swept by Minnesota, leaving them at 6-25 on the season.
You ain't seen nothing yet with the White Sox, folks.
Oh, the Cardinals right now, by the way, about 14-17 right now. They've been just okay. It's Brad Keller going for the White Sox tonight against old Sonny Gray for the Cardinals. Brad Keller, you know him mostly from his KC days, signed a minor league contract with the Sox during spring training. He's 1-1 with a 4.50 ERA in three starts at AAA Charlotte. That's one of the reasons to watch the White Sox. Actually, I don't know if that's a reason to watch, but just names that are going to pop up. Guys like Brad Keller that you're going to see on the rosters. Oh, yeah, Brad Keller, I remember that guy. He's going to get another shot. Yeah, because this is the team to try out on, man. If you want one more shot, you get a second chance. Come on down here. This is the place to do it. I mean, the Cubs fans just went through this with, I was talking about Frank Schwindel last night. God, that seems like it was so long ago. But the Cubs were allowed to ride with Frank Schwindel. And before that, Nate Sheerholtz. Sheerholtz! Back in the day. Like, I just think of those guys as rebuild names for the Cubs. Hell, Patrick Wisdom was part of that as well. He's hanging on by a limb. But he has been put in the right context now on the Chicago Cubs. So that's one reason to, and then obviously guys coming up from the minor leagues, you're going to get a lot more of that from the White Sox. So I'm just looking for ways to, really how I entertain myself as far as the White Sox are concerned. Listening to the Score today, I was listening to Bernstein and Holmes, and they had Josh Nelson on. Always love to hear what Josh Nelson has to say about the White Sox. He's definitely one of my favorite White Sox guys out there. And they started getting into a conversation. Tony La Russa's name came up because he's still with the organization, special assistant to the owner, to the manager, to the GM, whatever his title is right now. He's been bouncing around. Tony La Russa has become omnipresent with this White Sox organization. You can't quite get rid of him. But I heard this thrown out there for the first time, and maybe I'm a little behind, but I don't think so. This is what I heard that blew me away.
Is Tony La Russa the de facto GM, the shadow manager? No, you're laughing, but when I see Tommy Pham here,
yes,
and then Rafael Ortega coming up, and you know, Fletcher gets sent down, what are they? Who's in charge of figuring out what they're trying to do now and how that makes them better later?
That's a great question, because when we had our show, I thought if the White Sox got swept by the Twins in Minneapolis, that was justification to dismiss Pedro Grifol. And James arrives in Minneapolis. He's covering that series for us. And he's like, well, Chris Getz didn't make the trip, Josh. But Tony La Russa did. I'm like, oh, great. So shadow, I think, is a good way to describe Tony La Russa.
Because there's really no reason for Tony to travel. Even on a 45-minute flight to Mini, like, there's no reason for him to have to do that.
Unless he is reporting directly to Jerry Reinsdorf.
Which
you spot. And it brings to question, again, like, who's in charge of the Chicago White Sox? Is this totally on Chris Getz? But Getz has also talked about how much he enjoys La Russa being around and being able to pick his mind. So Tony La Russa is part of the decision making.
Okay, because they feel they have to say that now. Like, everybody's got to pay fealty somehow to this Jerry and Tony axis. That now there's no check or balance. Say what you want about the gravity of Kenny and Rick. At least there was somebody down the hall who could talk Jerry out of something.
Yeah, and that was Kenny, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if Tony does that at all, or just Tony just reports back to Jerry, and then Tony gives his two cents, and Jerry's like, hey, you know more about baseball than I do, so let's go with Tony's idea. So yeah, Tony's very much part of the decision-making process, and he's still Haynes around the team, and he still travels with the team. I expect Tony to be in St. Louis this weekend.
He just won't. Jerry Reinsdorf just won't give it up. Give it up, man. Give it up. You gave this guy a nice out from the White Sox. You said, okay, didn't work out with you as a manager. We know that you've been going through some health issues. We'll get you through all of that, and then we'll give you a nice, cozy position in the front office for the White Sox, and you could live there, and you could just kind of bounce around and do whatever. I think of it as like bringing your son to work and just go do whatever. Oh, you want to take some phone calls? You want to talk to some of the players? That's great. Just let him do his grandfather. That's what I thought was going on, and I understood why Sox fans would be disturbed that he's there in any way, shape, or form. But I was like, okay, that's fine. Give him this title and let him just do Tony La Russa stuff. That satiates the big boss, and that obviously makes Tony La Russa happy to pretend like he's involved with stuff. But it sounds like he's really involved. And then I got to thinking, while I was listening to that cut again and becoming frustrated, real question here, real question, Alex, and I'd like you to be my first victim to answer this question. You ready for this?
Oh, no.
Hold that cut.
Okay, that's fine.
You're going to need to play that again after I pose the question that I'm about to pose to you about the Chicago White Sox. Are you ready for this?
Bring it on.
This is what came to my brain. Would you rather have Tony La Russa or Pedro Grifol managing this team? Yeah, there's no answer.
Oh, no.
A really tough question, isn't it?
Jesus.
Pedro Grifol or Tony La Russa. Both have their perfect brands of incompetence at this time as managers. We know Pedro Grifol has done nothing, and we know Tony La Russa is a Hall of Famer whose fastball is clocking at about 82 miles per hour right now. If that, that's probably generous.
Yeah.
Got an answer
does
yet?
Does it even matter right now? I don't, like...
You can't answer that.
Just let
of course,
somebody
none
in
of this matters.
Section 108 come down and manage the team at this point for all I care.
Oh, my God. But isn't that a great question?
Yeah,
it's a probably. Horrible question because of the answer is I think helpless.
Yeah, so the question is, who would be better managing the White Sox right now? And I don't know.
Wow. It's so terrible, man. Oh, but you know what? What is Ricky Renteria doing right now? Wouldn't it be perfect if they somehow brought Ricky Renteria back? Isn't he due to manage a Chicago baseball team? I mean, it's been a while now.
Yeah, it's been a few years, so yeah. Just bring him back.
What's Robin Ventura doing? Oh, no, I got these tires to sell. That was Robin Ventura basically from the beginning. I don't know. I got the... Shut up, Dorn. So, oh, my God. I didn't even mean to come up with that, the La Russa, Pedro Grifol thing, but it's a... God, it is a horribly good question. That's why I'm going to put it at a horribly good question. Tony La Russa or Pedro Grifol? Is that a Sox call right there? Oh, it is? We got a Sox call? Oh, okay. Is it that? You know, it's funny, man. The names are getting cut off.
It's here. Jim from downtown.
Yeah. Oh, downtown. Okay. I see it carried
yeah,
over.
I was going to say that Tony's got more championships than the Cubs got in 108 years.
Well, yeah, look, Tony La Russa's a Hall of Fame manager. He was great when he was with the Oakland A's and the St. Louis Cardinals.
They love him in St. Louis.
Well,
they love him in St. Louis.
Well, and every reason, but too. But my
two favorite seasons for the Cubs were... 69 was my favorite season.
Oh, yeah,
but before that, Elvin Tappy and the College of Coaches. The Cubs, 108 years. 108 years to win a World Series. You know how long you got to live in Chicago to see the Cubs win a World Series? You got to live to be like Methuselah. You got to be Methuselah to do it. Anyway, guys, have a good weekend.
Take care. Is that
okay? That was an amazing call.
What's the conclusion of that call? That the Cubs suck.
I couldn't tell if he was a Cubs fan or not.
I don't know. Like, he's talking about, hey, you live in Chicago, you're never going to see a World Series, 108 years.
But Tony has won some World Series.
Oh, no, look,
that was his point, but I don't think that's your point.
Yeah, if we want to go back and do 1990s Oakland A's talk, sports talk radio, I am certainly down for that. If you want to talk about the Bash Brothers and Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart, too, that whole crew of guys. Yeah, absolutely. But I don't really know where we ended up with that call. Cubs fan? Or Sox fan. But it's a problem when you can ask a question like, would the Sox be better off with Tony La Russa or Pedro Grifol? So, I don't know. I find the whole thing very disturbing. And I can't imagine that this is going over well with the rest of the people from in the organization. Tony La Russa, you got to deal with it. You just have to deal with it. Maybe Chris gives a call to Rick Hahn and be like, yeah, man, I don't know what to tell you. It's a meet me out. Let's grab a couple beers. This would be Rick Hahn speaking. Grab a couple beers and I'll tell you how to handle it. And I will also tell you, you're helpless. There's nothing you can do about it.
Here's what I will say. I've watched a lot of Tony La Russa manage baseball teams in my life. A lot of people don't know I am originally from St. Louis. So I've seen a lot of Tony La Russa.
Don't worry. I'm not holding that against
you. Okay. It's okay. Yeah. I'm admitting it. This looks like a team that Tony La Russa would put together. I'm just saying. Paul DeJong, Nicky Lopez, Tommy Pham.
Holy
I mean,
crap.
Come on.
Holy
y'all,
crap.
This looks like a Tony La Russa put together team.
I didn't even connect those dots. Yeah, of course. He's always been partial to the veteran players, guys that are his. Of course. Of course. Man, that is scary. So what does this team become by the end of the season? If Tony La Russa, man, and what could happen is Grifol could be fired if Reinsdorf wants to pocket that money. You know where I'm going here right now. I mean, if Tony La Russa has that much power in the organization, why would it be inconceivable that he would take over the managerial reins after the All-Star break?
Maybe he's more valuable to Jerry in the role of shadow GM, though. Wants him to make all the roster decisions instead of just being...
Man,
the manager.
He can't be doing things like just putting together. Who would want to put together a lineup with that bunch of players on
right.
his team?
Because then, like, Jerry makes a living of, like, blaming the manager if things go wrong. If you put Tony La Russa as the manager, and that's guy, you can't really blame the manager.
You know what? I think, I don't even know what White Sox fans' reaction would be. At this point, I feel like they're not breakable because the Sox fans have been hit with so much that if they haven't been broken already, I highly doubt that Tony La Russa coming back to take care of the second half of the season. It's happening, folks. Post All-Star break, look for Tony La Russa to either be co-GM officially with Chris Getz or take over for Pedro Grifol.
Okay, 630 has a great point here. Do you see this? Martin Maldonado is probably the most capable manager in the organization right now.
That is true. Like, I'm trying to think. I guess, yeah, Paul DeJong would probably be a fine manager as well. Wily veteran, been around for a while. Man.
But you know those people in St. Louis, they always talk about if Yadier Molina, when he was playing, like player manager, the fringe Cardinals fans would always talk about that. So,
oh, God, that's true.
Maybe.
And you would know how much respect La Russa had and subsequent managers, Mike Matheny. Basically, you're a Cardinals guy, right? Mike Matheny, oh, not really. Okay, you're from there. Mike Matheny basically gave the team over to Yadier Molina. I don't know if you realize that, but he was like, and he has earned that respect, Yadier Molina, maybe not to the extent of, it felt like a LeBron James thing almost. Like, yes, it was out of context, a little bit disproportion, but Mike Matheny bowed down to Yadier Molina in those days.
And their relationship still wasn't good.
Right. Still, yeah, exactly.
But here's an idea for the Sox moving forward.
Okay.
David Eckstein.
Oh,
manager.
Oh, man.
I mean, come on.
Oh, wow.
Instilling culture.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's Jerry Reinsdorf's guy for sure. That would work perfectly. The other White Sox, now this is one that I have been hearing, and that is about the White Sox new TV play-by-play announcer, John Triffin, who has recently collected quite a bit of criticism for calling out the White Sox haters, some malaprops, some mispronunciations, like some not knowing why, you know, the Javier Baez would be booed at the ballpark. Just a few things that he is calling Bill Veeck. I'm mispronouncing the mispronunciation at this point. Like some of that stuff is not a good look. What I would say, though, about this is, look, and this is a good thing. Chicago is a mega market and one of the sports hubs of this country. So you got to know, and this is for anybody coming in from the outside, and many have done it, and many have been very successful not being from Chicago or not being of the White Sox in any way, shape, or form. We are in Chicago and its suburbs. We are very territorial. It's just the way it is, and you should be. You know, I will give you examples of guys that I didn't really like at first, and then they went on to greatness. First time I heard Pat Hughes. This is like way back when Pat Hughes first started. I was not in the business, anything like that. And it was the first year of Pat Hughes, and I'm listening to this deep stereo voice and very clean, and I'm like, what the hell is this? It's like I'm listening to, you know, FM radio here. What's going on? And it had a great sound, but it just didn't sound like Cubs radio because of, you know, obviously everybody's different, and I like the predecessors and all of that. And then, obviously, Pat Hughes is a Hall of Famer. I don't need to go through all of his plaudits, and I love Pat. But as a territorial Chicago sports fan, at first, I was like, who is this guy? What's going on? Same thing with Len Casper, quite frankly. I mean, who's this guy from Detroit? What does he know? How did he get this job? He's with the Marlins? What? Milwaukee? Whoa. You're like, all of that. Took me a long time to get used to Len. But that's just because we are territorial and we have a very high grading system as well. The other problem that, you know, John Schifrin has run into is his predecessor. That's Jason Benetti, who was very cozy with the Chicago media. And he was very good, too. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, Benetti deserves the praise that he has gotten and has earned himself all the jobs that he's had. But Benetti was friendly with here, everywhere. He seemed to be a favorite, could do no wrong, it felt like, in that regard. So, and I'm definitely not saying like John Schifrin needs to cozy up to anybody, but there's no doubt that Benetti had a better game plan in that regard. Same with Len Casper. I mean, Len Casper cozied up to the score. Like those were good business decisions. So there was a little bit of benefit of the doubt with those guys, I think, early on. But I just think I think some of the calls that John Schifrin said, I got no problem with any of it. I think he's risen to the occasion on lots of calls. I think he's probably going to be here a long time, and I think he's probably going to be good. But I would just say, like, you just got to tread lightly no matter where you
100%.
Go. Yeah, no matter where you go. But especially, this ain't just any sports town.
I figured that out quickly, and I'm not the play-by-play voice of the White Sox.
Right,
but
right.
You have to... You have to sit and learn a little bit.
Do things on their terms for a second.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Don't try to have all the answers right away. Certainly do your homework. But yeah, that's a mistake that, I mean, I could even like think of my own career. Like back when I worked in Lincoln, Illinois. What's up, Railers? Like back then, I'm a Chicago kid. I'm cutting my teeth in radio in Lincoln, Illinois. Lincoln, Illinois, just a wonderful town between Bloomington, Normal, and Springfield. I did everything, morning show. I did all the play-by-play.
You went the small market route, stand up.
Absolutely. Nah, hey, kids, it's the way to go. I'll tell you all about it someday. But I was doing Lincoln Railers games, and I found out pretty fast that nobody gave a crap that I was from Chicago. As a matter of fact, it probably worked against me in that regard. And I had to kind of tread lightly and respect what the town was all about and what they valued and what they were into. Imagine that. Like, I'm a pro sports town guy.
Right.
And now I'm covering high school sports, which turned out to be a blast. I don't regret a second of it. I know guys in pro sports now because of my time covering high school sports. I mean, it was like one of the great experiences, but I had to learn what people valued and I had to tread lightly and all of that. And it's just that's the only advice that I would give to John Schifrin, to tread lightly. And I think he could be really successful.
100% agree. And it is a tough situation. Could you imagine taking over for Jason Benetti?
Oh, yeah.
Well, brutal situation, and the team is god awful,
no doubt. And hey, Benetti had to take over for Hawk. There was definitely a transition there, but you know, Benetti came in with a boatload more experience. He came in with, you know, obviously, and I know Schifrin has some too, you know, the big national shine to go with that as well.
And the connection to the job.
The connection to the job, being from the area again, like he's got that cred like right there in his pocket naturally. He doesn't have to think about it, doesn't have to study it. It's right there for sure. But I will say, Benetti got, like, he was so close to so many people in this town that he also got the benefit of the doubt in that regard. So that's what I'm thinking right now about. I root for the guy. I mean, I hope he crushes, and I hope he's here for a long time, and this was just a little bumpy and that he's learning lessons right now. But I would just say, like Walter White, tread lightly. What's my name? God, I haven't talked about Breaking Bad for a long time. That feels really good. We do need to take a break right now because it's time to get back to the Chicago Cubs. When we return, we're going to bring in Andy Martinez of the Marquee Sports Network to talk about the Cubs, who lost today. Another bullpen breakdown, yet another very positive start from a young Cub. We'll discuss it next on The Score.
We're just trying to win a baseball game. This is a good team. I think you spend most of your time trying to figure out how to beat the team. There are people there that I have really good relationships with, and look, you miss people for sure. I mean, I miss people over there, absolutely, yeah, because you have strong relationships with people. So, you know, when you see people that you've spent a lot of time with and you miss them, like, yeah, absolutely, that's what kind of brings the emotion to it.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
But Craig Counsell, the Cubs manager, is just much more concerned with the early season puzzle that he is attempting to put together, or should I say keep together. Mark Grody with you here on The Score until 9 o'clock. We're going to talk to Mike Golic Jr. about the Bears and the NFL in about a half an hour from right now. But it was another rough day for Craig Counsell's Chicago Cubs. The Cubs are 19-14. They've had a nice start to the season. But they had another alarming loss, we'll call it, to the Milwaukee Brewers today. 3-1 was the final score. Two headliners, Hayden Wesneski, who we're going to talk about here in a second, was awesome. But it happened again. Adbert Alzolay allowed 3 runs in the 8th inning. The game, it was 1-0 Cubs before Adbert Alzolay. After Adbert Alzolay, it was 3-1, and the Brewers go on to beat the Cubs as Alzolay blew it again. So there are serious issues, and that's part of the puzzle that Craig Counsell is putting together. To help to make more sense of it all and to go in depth on the Cubs, let's bring in Andy Martinez, Cubs reporter for the Marquee Sports Network. You can find him on X at AMMARTINEZ_11. Andy, thanks for joining us on a Friday night, man. What's going on?
Not much. Thanks for having me.
No, absolutely. What's your take on Adbert Alzolay?
It's definitely alarming for the Chicago Cubs right now with Adbert Alzolay. I mean, this is a guy who came into the season as the team's closer, pretty well undisputed closer. He took that role and ran with it last year. And it was almost to the point where you kind of came in the season, it's like, the 9th inning, you're good with it. There's still that concern. I was actually talking with Tony and Drake, my coworker, and we're talking about how the bullpens are so volatile year to year. Mm-hmm. So there was always that, like, well, like, yes, he did it last year, but this year is a whole new year. Like, there was always that, but it always felt like especially with Adbert, it's like, worst case scenario, he's like the setup man to Hector Neris, right? Like, he is, like, and it's a good problem to have. I just did not see the struggles that he's having right now coming in my wildest, you know, predictions of the Cubs season. Like, if you would have told me, like, someone else in the bullpen would have struggled this much, like, I would have believed it. Adbert right now, his struggles are just profound. And it just seems like even when he's starting to turn a corner, it's right back to what happened. And I go back to his last outing against the Mets, where it seems like he's kind of having a clean inning. Then there's the Dansby Swanson error. Then there's a home run, and, you know, another the long ball that's plagued him all year comes back and hits him. And then today, it wasn't the long ball, but it was singles. It was runners running on him. Like, it's just compounding on him. And this is Craig Counsell said it best after the game. He said, we need Adbert, because the fact of the matter is, right now with their injuries, with their pitching situation, like, he has to use him. Like, there's not many other options for him to turn to. And today he had a lot of guys down after pitching back to backs. Like, he had to go to Adbert Alzolay in that situation, and it made sense, and it just didn't work out.
You're right. Absolutely. And I think part of that is your earlier point about that nobody saw this coming. Nobody thought that Adbert Alzolay was going to blow four saves. So it's like I'm putting myself in council's shoes. When he brought Alzolay in, I was okay with it. I was like, okay, you know, this is a guy that has proven he can pitch in high leverage. And obviously it went terribly wrong again. But now I switch to, now you can't do this. You can't bring, I know you, as you said, correct, you had to. You got to get, because of all the injuries that are going on, I don't know what to do with him now, because you can't send him down. You know, I'm not ready to just get rid of Adbert Alzolay. So what's next? Is there a phantom injury? Do you go low leverage? How do you get this guy right? Because I can't put him out there in high leverage anytime soon after today.
Yeah, it has to be low leverage, barring like some sort of IL stint like you alluded to. But he has said like there's no injury right now. Like, he mentioned a couple weeks ago when the struggles really first started, when he had blown his last save in the ninth inning, he mentioned like one of the things that he felt was going wrong was mechanical issues where he's not tunneling pitches, and the slider and fastball weren't coming out of the same tunnel, and hitters were picking up on that. Like, hitters are so good at the major league level that any slight adjustment like that, they're gonna see it and pounce on it right away, and that's kind of what happened. And it's like you got to get him into the low leverage situations, because you need him. You need all 13 of your pitchers throughout the course of a season, or wherever you have them in the roster. You could, like you mentioned, he's out of options. Like, they can't send him down. You can't send him to Iowa and say, let's figure this thing out. He has to figure it out. And if that's coming in when either the team's up big or down big and pitching for an inning and trying to get a clean inning and second clean inning, after clean inning, then that's probably what they have to do right now. And it's so shocking to me to see these struggles from Adbert Alzolay, a guy that wasn't him last year. Like, he really never had any issues last year. It seemed like he had taken that closer role and really cemented himself. Like, the people's fist became a thing and everything, like, right? Like, after every win, it was seeing the people's fist from Adbert Alzolay. And I think that's still in there somewhere. It's just a matter of somehow getting it out of him and trying to make the Cubs bullpen the best it can be.
What was crazy specifically, too, about today on Alzolay is I think he was ahead in the count on just about everybody he faced. The hit by William Contreras, it had been 1-2. Both of the hits by Willie Adames and Jake Bauer, there were definitely 1-2 counts for both of those guys. I don't know if that's something you noticed, but I guess my question to you is, what's going on? Is he just missing spots? Is it tipping pitches, or is it just a big mystery still with him?
I mean, I think it goes back to what he had said earlier in the season, where he's not telling these pitches. And it's like, even if your spot is, let's say, just for a hypothetical, it's down and in, right? If it's down and in, it's a slider, but you're not tumbling at the same release point as your fastball, like, hitters are going to pick up on that, and they're going to see it and be able to hit it right away. And I think he doesn't know why the tunneling isn't happening. It's what helps him have success. It's what helps every major league pitcher that has any sort of success have success, where every pitch looks like it's coming out of the same arm angle, but they're totally different. Right. And for him, that's just not happening right now. And they got to figure it out sooner than later, or else this is just going to keep happening.
Yeah, so we know Hector Neris can pitch in high leverage. He's been a little bit too dramatic at times and getting guys on base and then, you know, getting yourself out of the trouble. So he's there. But who else are they going to try in the ninth or even in high leverage situations here in the next couple of weeks, do you think?
I think the two guys that jump out right away are Mark Leiter Jr. and Yency Almonte. And Yency Almonte to me is a really interesting guy, because his first outing against Colorado, it was raining, it was cold, he allows three runs, and the Rockies get back into it.
And
I remember like just seeing the reaction on Cubs Twitter. Everyone's like freaking out, like, well, what is this guy doing on the team? And like the beauty about bullpens, at least in my opinion, and I can become guilty of this early on in the season, is like one bad outing, and your ERA jumps through the roof, right? Like
yep.
You could have one good outing, and then the next one you give up three runs, and your ERA balloons up, right? And that was the problem with Yensi Almonte last year in Los Angeles. I wrote about this on MarqueeSportsNetwork.com. Last year he was coming off a really good 2022 with LA, and he struggles in 2023 to start the year, and he's chasing his ERA. He wants to get that ERA down. And he's trying to get four outs in one hitter. And, like, that's literally impossible. Like, he's trying to do too much is what I'm getting at. And then everything just started compounding, right? And the ERA started getting higher. And then he gets hurt. And then now he's really chasing everything. And things got away from him. And he learned from that, knowing, like, if he has a bad outing, that's in the past. And now it's about getting that next outing or that next batter out. And he's really done that. He's been a really good leverage arm for Craig Counsell, especially against righties, kind of like how Mark Leiter Jr. is being used against lefties. And what I think makes them so valuable is Craig Counsell can use them kind of in any situation, right? Like if it's a sixth inning and it's a pocket of lefties coming up in a one-run game, he's not afraid to go to Mark Leiter Jr. If it's a seventh inning and it's a two-run game, it's a pocket of righties, he's not afraid to go to Yensi Almonte. The problem, though, is that ninth inning. And as good as those two guys are, like Neris is holding down that spot right now, but as we've seen, like you can't pitch a guy every single day. That's what happened last year, where those guys by the end of the season are gassed. You can't burn these guys out in April and May. So it's trying to find out who is another option. And right now, beyond Neris, like there really isn't. And maybe one of these young guys, maybe one of these NRI guys comes up and takes the spot. Daniel Palencia's looked pretty good in spurts, but he's also had his struggles. Like I just don't know where that solution comes from. Now that Edward Alzai kind of hasn't taken that job back.
Yeah, it's really created quite a conundrum. We're talking to Andy Martinez, Cubs reporter for the Marquee Sports Network. I am Mark Grody on the score. Hayden Wesneski was terrific today. 6 1/3, didn't allow a run, 3 hits, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks, 90 pitches on the day. What did you think about his performance, and what does it mean for him?
I think it's a really good step in the right direction for him. This was a guy coming into last year. He was the fifth starter out of opening day. He won that fifth starter job over Javier Assad. Javier Assad started as a swing man last year, and he was kind of like Almonte, coming off a good end to 2022, and things are looking up, and it just never got going for him. He spent a lot of the time in AAA. There was flashes, but it was never what you had seen in 2022. And this year, he starts the year in AAA, and the injuries he comes up as a starter, he's really reaffirmed himself as a starting pitching option for the Cubs. It's been a welcome relief. I believe going into today, the Cubs were eighth in starting pitching ERA in all of baseball, which is to me is one of the craziest stats of the Cubs this season and kind of sums up what's going well for them. Because Justin Steele goes down on opening day, Jameson Taillon starts the season on the IL, and Kyle Hendricks has a 12.0 ERA through 5 starts and is on the IL. Those are your top 3 starters. Those guys would have been lined up 1, 2, 3 if they were all healthy for this to open the season. And yet you still have the 8th best ERA from starting pitchers in baseball. Like that's kind of remarkable. And it speaks to the depth that they have beyond just Wisniewski, guys like Ben Brown and Javier Assad and Shota Imanaga, of course, but Wisniewski is really creating himself as an option to continue to make starts, right? Like it's, When Steele comes back and when Kyle Hendricks comes back, it becomes interesting. Like, how can you move Hayden Wesneski out of the rotation when he's pitching this well? And maybe you go to a 6-man to kind of try and alleviate some of the usage on a lot of these guys in general. Maybe that's the solution, but it's a good problem to have from a starting pitching perspective for the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely – we've gotten educated on some of these guys and some of the capabilities, as you mentioned, Assad and Hayden Wesneski. And, yes, people should know, as I know that you've already reported, Justin Steele scheduled to be back for the Cubs on the big league team on Monday and pitching against the San Diego Padres. So that certainly will be a big boost for the Cubs. And we started the conversation with Craig Counsell because it's his first day back against the Milwaukee Brewers and all the emotions that go into that. But how much credit do you give Craig Counsell for what he's been able to put together, a 19-14 record, a good start to the season with all that has been going on? Do you think that Craig Counsell is making a difference, or do you think that David Ross could have done the same thing?
No, I think Craig Counsell is definitely making a big difference to this team. And like the prime example, I have two prime examples I'll use. And the first one is with Pete Carr Armstrong, right? This is a guy that came up last year, struggled in the major leagues. There's a lot of hoopla surrounding him as a top prospect. And he gets called up to because of the Cody Bellinger injury, and Craig Counsell tells him, like, you're up here because of an injury, and once he's healthy, you're going back down. And it almost alleviated the pressure to the point where PCA is contributing on all facets of his game, right? Yeah. He had that home run as his first hit that won them the game. He's having doubles, he's having some good base running, he's playing pretty good defense out there in center field. Like, I think it alleviates the pressure. And the other example is Alexander Canario. I remember the first game of the doubleheader against the Marlins a week or two ago. He came up to bat in the ninth inning, and it was like, well, why not pinch hit Cody Bellinger against the lefty? Cody Bellinger wasn't starting because he was going to start the night game. Like, why not use Cody Bellinger? And Canario strikes out, and it's like, oh, definitely you should use Cody Bellinger instead of Canario. But that's like a learning experience for Canario. He talked to me after the game, and I remember him telling me, like, the moment got the best of him, and now he knows what to do. And then in that second game, he hits a home run, Cubs win that game. Like, all these little things that, like, right now might seem nothing are what can help the team win later on, right? Canario, maybe in June or July or August, whatever, he comes up in the ninth inning again, and he knows, like, I don't have to hit a six-run home run. I just need to put the ball in play and kind of eases up. Like, I think it's just those little intangibles that are making a big difference, that when these guys that – you've never heard of, like a Richard Lovelady, comes in and pitches a clean one inning. Like, I think that is has something to do with Craig Counsell.
Yeah, he's learning these guys too. Like, he's learning their limits. Like Javier Saad, let's talk about this earlier. Like, he seems like a five inning guy. A couple times he's literally let him go into the sixth inning and twice given up two run homers. We saw it yesterday, and I know, like, a lot of this, he's got to push these guys. Keegan Thompson got out of a jam, but then gave up some damage. Daniel Palencia, same thing, had a fist pumping moment, throwing 100 miles per hour, and then he gives up the game winning home run because either Counsell just wants to see what these guys can do, or he has to. So we can't leave out the part where Craig Counsell, he's learning his players. He's learning their limits right now, and I think that's what a good manager does. You got to take some chances, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of his first things he mentioned when spring training started way back in February, he was saying, like, I don't know what Jordan Wicks looks like when he's on 80 pitches in the fifth inning. Like, I don't know what my cues are to be able to say, hey, like, I need to go pull this guy, even though his pitch count's low, or even though it's only the fourth. Like, he didn't know those things, and he was pretty open about that. And even when Jameson Taillon made his first start, he was asked, like, what is he looking to see out of Jameson Taillon? And he's like, I just want to see him pitch. I've never actually seen him pitch in a game. He didn't pitch in any spring training games. He pitched in rehab games where Craig Counsell was not what. Like, he just did not see him in person. So, like, getting his eyes on these and being on these guys and being able to find those tells of, like, all right, this guy's pressing too much in this situation, where this guy is really, really fatigued, even though, you know, everything else tells me he's not, et cetera, et cetera. Like, finding those cues, I think, are so pivotal to him, especially early on, that it should help them in the long run for sure.
Yeah, I definitely feel that will be the case. It's going to be really interesting to see what this Cubs team is like once they get it all clicking, once Craig Counsell, you know, has Justin Steele back in there, and you know, you get the rest of your bats back in there with Cody Bellinger, all these guys, and you know, obviously, say a Suzuki. It's going to be really interesting to see what it's like once he gets this puppy clicking. Andy, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely. Andy Martinez always giving us good information here about the Chicago Cubs. A little later on, probably around 8:35 or so, maybe a little later than that, I've got a couple of Cubs solutions, a couple of minor league potential solutions that I want to talk about. When we return, I've got a little bit of a Bears conundrum, and there is a father of a Bears player who competed with one of our SCORE staff members that I would like to do. Do you know what I'm talking about here? No, you don't know. Okay. All right. Then this will be a surprise to Alex Kuhn as well. I'm Mark Grody. That's coming up next on The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
David Haw beat the Beast. That's right. You know who the Beast is? It's a Matt Eberflus nickname. But no, that's not where I'm going with this. The Beast is not Tyson Bagent, the Bears' backup quarterback. The Beast is Travis Bagent, the dad of the Bears' backup quarterback, who is a 28-time arm wrestling champion. I don't know what the league is called. I don't know if they have a belt with that, if there's different divisions, but he's won something in arm wrestling 28 times. So,
and Hall beat him?
Check this out, man. So, Bajant and Bajant, dad and son, were in the studios down the block at NBC Sports Chicago.
That is not a law firm, by the way.
That is not a law firm. David Hall was hosting, and he got to arm wrestle on the air. I haven't seen it. I have not been able to open it up yet, but I am told that David Haw arm wrestled him on live television and beat Travis Bajant, the beast, the 28-time arm wrestling champion. So, wow, that is historic. I cannot wait to hear reaction from David Haw on how it went down. But that's pretty impressive right there.
So David Haw's been working out.
Clearly.
Been pumping some iron.
I think Haw always stays in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but I mean,
you got to be. Yeah,
beat
you
the
be,
world champ?
Yeah, right. You better be injecting yourself with something.
Something.
To get to that point. You must have had something.
It was the Wheaties.
So congratulations to the Scores David Haw. Apparently a arm wrestling champion. Yes. Another thing, too, on the Bears is I was struggling today. I was watching the Cubs game. Just I devoted my sports watching day, obviously, to watching all of the Cubs game, watching with a purpose. And I'm doing other stuff, getting ready for the show. And I'm like, I know we got a couple of Bears guests on here, football guests. I'm like, what's my angle? Like, what am I thinking about here with the Bears? Where do I want to go with it? I went Carl Williams last night. I had a pretty good thing going last night. I couldn't come up with discuss it next on the Score.
We're just trying to win a baseball game. This is a good team. I think you spend most of your time trying to figure out how to beat the team. There are people there that I have really good relationships with, and look, you miss people for sure. I mean, I miss people over there, absolutely. Yeah, because you have strong relationships with people. So, you know, when you see people that you've spent a lot of time with and you miss them, like, yeah, absolutely. That's what kind of brings the emotion to it.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
But Craig Counsell, the Cubs manager, is just much more concerned with the early season puzzle that he is attempting to put together, or should I say keep together. Mark Grody with you here on the Score until 9 o'clock. We're going to talk to Mike Golic Jr. about the Bears and the NFL in about a half an hour from right now. But it was another rough day for Craig Counsell's Chicago Cubs. The Cubs are 19-14. They've had a nice start to the season. But they had another alarming loss, we'll call it, to the Milwaukee Brewers today. 3-1 was the final score. Two headliners, Hayden Wesneski, who we're going to talk about here in a second, was awesome. But it happened again. Adbert Alzolay allowed 3 runs in the 8th inning. The game, it was 1-0 Cubs before Adbert Alzolay. After Adbert Alzolay, it was 3-1, and the Brewers go on to beat the Cubs as Alzolay blew it again. So there are serious issues, and that's part of the puzzle that Craig Counsell is putting together. To help to make more sense of it all and to go in depth on the Cubs, let's bring in Andy Martinez, Cubs reporter for the Marquee Sports Network. You can find him on X at AMMARTINEZ_11. Andy, thanks for joining us on a Friday night, man. What's going on?
Not much. Thanks for having me.
No, absolutely. What's your take on Adbert Alzolay?
It's definitely alarming for the Chicago Cubs right now with Adbert Alzolay. I mean, this is a guy who came into the season as the team's closer, pretty well undisputed closer. He took that role and ran with it last year. And it was almost to the point where you kind of came in the season, it's like, the 9th inning, you're good with it. There's still that concern. I was actually talking with Tony Drake, my coworker, and we're talking about how the bullpens are so volatile year to year. Mm-hmm. So there was always that, like, well, like, yes, he did it last year, but this year is a whole new year. Like, there was always that. But it always felt like with, especially with Adver, it's like, worst case scenario, he's like the setup man to Hector Neris, right? Like, he is like, and it's a good problem to have. I just did not see the struggles that he's having right now coming in my wildest, you know, predictions of the Cubs season. Like, if you would have told me, like, someone else in the bullpen would have struggled this much, like, I would have believed it. Adver right now, his struggles are just profound. And it just seems like even when he's starting to turn a corner, it's right back to what happened. And I go back to his last outing against the Mets, where it seems like he's kind of having a clean inning. Then there's the Dansby Swanson error. Then there's a home run. And, you know, another the long ball that's played him all year comes back and hits him. And then today, it wasn't the long ball, but it was singles. It was runners running on him. Like, it's just compounding on him. And this is Craig Counsell said it best after the game. He said we need Adver, because the fact of the matter is right now, with their injuries, with their pitching situation, like, he has to use him. Like, there's not many other options for him to turn to. And today, he had a lot of guys down after pitching back to back. Like, he had to go to Adbert Alzolay in that situation, and it made sense, and it just didn't work out.
You're right, absolutely. And I think part of that is your earlier point about that nobody saw this coming. Nobody thought that Adbert Alzolay was going to blow four saves. So it's like I'm putting myself in Counsell's shoes. When he brought Alzolay in, I was okay with it. I was like, okay, you know, this is a guy that has proven he can pitch in high leverage. And obviously it went terribly wrong again. But now I switch to, now you can't do this. You can't. I know, you, as you said, correct, you had to. You got to get, because of all the injuries that are going on, I don't know what to do with him now, because you can't send him down. You know, I'm not ready to just get rid of Adbert Alzolay. So what's next? Is there a phantom injury? Do you go low leverage? How do you get this guy right? Because I can't put him out there in high leverage anytime soon after today.
Yeah, it has to be low leverage, barring like some sort of IL stint like you alluded to, but he said, like, there's no injury right now. Like, he mentioned a couple weeks ago when the struggles really first started, when he had blown his last save in the ninth inning, he mentioned, like, one of the things that he felt was going wrong was mechanical issues where he's not tunneling pitches, and the slider and fastball weren't coming out of the same tunnel, and hitters were picking up on that. Like, hitters are so good at the major league level that any slight adjustment like that, they're gonna see it and pounce on it right away, and that's kind of what happened. And it's like, you got to get him into the low leverage situations, because you need him. You need all 13 of your pitchers throughout the course of a season, or wherever you have him in the roster. You could, like you mentioned, he's out of options. Like, they can't send him down. You can't send him to Iowa and say, let's figure this thing out. He has to figure it out. And if that's coming in when either the team's up big or down big and pitching for an inning and trying to get a clean inning and second clean inning, after clean inning, then that's probably what they have to do right now. And it's so shocking to me to see these struggles from Adbert Alzolay, a guy that wasn't him last year. Like, he really never had any issues last year. It seemed like he had taken that closer role and really cemented himself. Like, the people's fist became a thing and everything, like, right? Like, after every win, it was seeing the people's fist from Adbert Alzolay. And I think that's still in there somewhere. It's just a matter of somehow getting it out of him. And trying to make the Cubs bullpen the best it can be.
What was crazy specifically, too, about today on Alzolay is I think he was ahead in the count on just about everybody he faced. The hit by William Contreras, it had been 1-2. Both of the hits by Willie Adames and Jake Bauer, there were definitely 1-2 counts for both of those guys. I don't know if that's something you noticed, but I guess my question to you is, what's going on? Is he just missing spots? Is it tipping pitches, or is it just a big mystery still with him?
I mean, I think it goes back to what he had said earlier in the season where he's not telling these pitches. And it's like, even if your spot is, let's say, just for a hypothetical, it's down and in, right? If it's down and in, it's a slider, but you're not tunneling at the same release point as your fastball, like, hitters are going to pick up on that and they're going to see it and be able to hit it right away. And I think he doesn't know why the tunneling isn't happening. It's what helps him have success. It's what helps every major league pitcher that has any sort of success have success, where every pitch looks like it's coming out of the same arm angle, but they're totally different, right? And for him, that's just not happening right now. And it's got to, they got to figure it out sooner than later, or else this is just going to keep happening.
Yeah, so we know Hector Neris can pitch in high leverage. He's been a little bit too dramatic at times, getting guys on base and then, you know, getting yourself out of the trouble. So he's there. But who else are they going to try in the ninth or even in high leverage situations here in the next couple of weeks, do you think?
I think the two guys that jump out right away are Mark Leiter Jr. and Yency Almonte. And Yency Almonte to me is a really interesting guy, because his first outing against Colorado, it was raining, it was cold, he allows three runs, and the Rockies get back into it.
And
I remember like just seeing the reaction on Cubs Twitter. Everyone's like freaking out, like, well, what is this guy doing on the team? And like the beauty about bullpens, at least in my opinion, and I can become guilty of this early on in the season, is like one bad outing and your ERA jumps through the roof, right? Like you could have one good outing, and then the next one you give up three runs and your ERA balloons up, right? And that was the problem with Yency Almonte last year in Los Angeles. I wrote about this on MarqueeSportsNetwork.com. Last year he was coming off a really good 2022 with LA, and he struggles in 2023 to start the year, and he's chasing his ERA. He wants to get that ERA down. And he's trying to get four outs in one hitter. And like, that's literally impossible. Like, he's trying to do too much, is what I'm getting at. And then everything just started compounding, right? And the ERA started getting higher, and then he gets hurt. And then now he's really chasing everything, and things got away from him. And he learned from that, knowing like, if he has a bad outing, that's in the past. And now it's about getting that next outing, or that next batter out. And he's really done that. He's been a really good leverage arm for Craig Counsell, especially against righties, kind of like how Mark Leiter Jr. is being used against lefties. And what I think makes them so valuable is Craig Counsell can use them kind of in any situation, right? Like if it's a sixth inning and it's a pocket of lefties coming up in a one-run game, he's not afraid to go to Mark Leiter Jr. If it's a seventh inning and it's a two-run game, it's a pocket of righties, he's not afraid to go to Yency Almonte. The problem, though, is that ninth inning. And as good as those two guys are, like, Neris is holding down that spot right now, but as we've seen, like, you can't pitch a guy every single day. That's what happened last year, where those guys, by the end of the season, are gassed. You can't burn these guys out in April and May. So it's trying to find out who is another option. And right now, beyond Neris, like, there really isn't. And maybe one of these young guys, maybe one of these NRI guys comes up and takes the spot. Daniel Palencia's looked pretty good in spurts, but he's also had his struggles. Like, I just don't know where that solution comes from. Now that Edward Alzai kind of hasn't taken that job back.
Yeah, it's really created quite a conundrum. We're talking to Andy Martinez, Cubs reporter for the Marquee Sports Network. I am Mark Grody on The Score. Hayden Wesneski was terrific today. 6 1/3, didn't allow a run, 3 hits, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks, 90 pitches on the day. What did you think about his performance, and what does it mean for him?
I think it's a really good step in the right direction for him. This was a guy coming into last year. He was the fifth starter out of opening day. He won that fifth starter job over Javier Assad. Javier Assad started as a swing man last year, and he was kind of like Almonte, coming off a good end to 2022, and things are looking up, and it just never got going for him. He spent a lot of the time in AAA. There was flashes, but it was never what you had seen in 2022. And this year he starts the year in AAA, and the injuries, he comes up as a starter. He's really reaffirmed himself as a starting pitching option for the Cubs. It's been a welcome relief. I believe going into today, the Cubs were eighth in starting pitching ERA in all of baseball, which is, to me, is one of the craziest stats of the Cubs this season, and kind of sums up what's going well for them. Because Justin Steele goes down on opening day. Jameson Taillon starts the season on the IL. And Kyle Hendricks has a 12.0 ERA through 5 starts and is on the IL. Those are your top 3 starters. Those guys would have been lined up 1, 2, 3 if they were all healthy to open the season. And yet you still have the 8th best ERA from starting pitchers in baseball. Like, that's kind of remarkable, and it speaks to the depth that they have beyond just Wisniewski, guys like Ben Brown and Javier Assad and Shota Imanaga, of course. But Wisniewski is really creating himself as an option to continue to make starts, right? Like, it's when Steele comes back and when Kyle Hendricks comes back, it becomes interesting. Like, how can you move Hayden Wesneski out of the rotation when he's pitching this well? And maybe you go to a 6-man to kind of try and alleviate some of the usage on a lot of these guys in general, maybe that's the solution, but it's a good problem to have from a starting pitching perspective for the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, we've gotten educated on some of these guys and some of the capabilities, as you mentioned, Assad and Hayden Wesneski. And yes, people should know, as I know that you've already reported, Justin Steele scheduled to be back for the Cubs on the big league team on Monday and pitching against the San Diego Padres. So that certainly will be a big boost for the Cubs. And we started the conversation with Craig Counsell because it's his first day back against the Milwaukee Brewers and all the emotions that go into that. But how much credit do you give Craig Counsell for what he's been able to put together, a 19-14 record, a good start to the season with all that has been going on? Do you think that Craig Counsell is making a difference, or do you think that David Ross could have done the same thing?
No, I think Craig Counsell is definitely making a big difference to this team. And like the prime example, I have two prime examples I'll use. And the first one is with Pete Crow Armstrong, right? This is a guy that came up last year, struggled in the major leagues. There's a lot of hoopla surrounding him as a top prospect. And he gets called up to because of the Cody Bellinger injury. And Craig Counsell tells him, like, you're up here because of an injury. And once he's healthy, you're going back down. And it almost alleviated the pressure to the point where PCA is contributing on all facets of his game, right? Yeah. He had that home run as his first hit that won them the game. He's having doubles. He's having some good base running. He's playing pretty good defense out there in center field. Like, I think it alleviates the pressure. And the other example is Alexander Canario. I remember the first game of the doubleheader against the Marlins a week or two ago. He came up to bat in the ninth inning, and it was like, well, why not pinch hit Cody Bellinger against the lefty? Cody Bellinger wasn't starting because he was going to start the night game. Like, why not use Cody Bellinger? And Canario strikes out, and it's like, oh, definitely you should use Cody Bellinger instead of Canario. But that's like a learning experience for Canario. He talked to me after the game, and I remember him telling me, like, the moment got the best of him, and now he knows what to do. And then in that second game, he hits a home run, Cubs win that game. Like, all these little things that, like, right now might seem – no, like nothing of what can help the team win later on, right? Canario, maybe in June or July or August, whatever, he comes up in the ninth inning again, and he knows, like, I don't have to hit a 6-run home run. I just need to put the ball in play, and kind of eases up. Like, I think it's just those little intangibles that are making a big difference, that when these guys that you've never heard of, like a Richard Lovelady, comes in and pitches a clean one inning, like, I think that has something to do with Craig Counsell.
Yeah, he's learning these guys too. Like, he's learning their limits. Like Javier Assad, I was talking about this earlier. Like, he seems like a 5-inning guy. A couple times he's literally let him go into the 6th inning and twice given up 2-run homers. We saw it yesterday, and I know, like, a lot of this, he's got to push these guys. Keegan Thompson got out of a jam, but then gave up some damage. Daniel Palencia, same thing, had a fist-pumping moment, throwing 100 miles per hour, and then he gives up the game-winning home run because either Counsell just wants to see what these guys can do, or he has to. So we can't leave out the part where Craig Counsell, he's learning his players. He's learning their limits right now, and I think that's what a good manager does. You got to take some chances, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of his first things he mentioned when spring training started way back in February, he was saying, like, I don't know what Jordan Wicks looks like when he's on 80 pitches in the 5th inning. Like, I don't know what my cues are to be able to say, hey, like, I need to go pull this guy, even though his pitch count's low, or even though it's only the 4th. Like, he didn't know those things, and he was pretty open about that. And even when Jameson Taillon made his first start, he was asked, like, what is he looking to see out of Jameson Taillon? And he's like, I just want to see him pitch. I've never actually seen him pitch in a game. He didn't pitch in any spring training games. He pitched in rehab games where Craig Counsell was not what, like, he just did not see him in person. So, like, getting his eyes on these and being on these guys and being able to find those tells of, like, all right, this guy's pressing too much in this situation, or this guy is really, really fatigued, even though, you know, everything else tells me he's not, et cetera, et cetera. Like, finding those cues, I think, are so pivotal to him, especially early on, that it should help them in the long run for sure.
Yeah, I definitely feel that will be the case. It's going to be really interesting to see what this Cubs team is like once they get it all clicking, once Craig Counsell, you know, has Justin Steele back in there, and, you know, you get the rest of your bats back in there with Cody Bellinger, all these guys, and, you know, obviously, say, a Suzuki. It's going to be really interesting to see what it's like once he gets this puppy clicking. Andy, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely. Andy Martinez always giving us good information here about the Chicago Cubs. A little later on, probably around 8:35 or so, maybe a little later than that, I've got a couple of Cubs solutions, a couple of minor league potential solutions that I want to talk about. When we return, I've got a little bit of a Bears conundrum, and there is a father of a Bears player who competed with one of our SCORE staff members that I would like to do. Do you know what I'm talking about here? No, you don't know. Okay. All right. Then this will be a surprise to Alex Kuhn as well. I'm Mark Grody. That's coming up next on The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
David Haw beat the Beast. That's right. You know who the Beast is? It's a Matt Eberflus nickname. But no, that's not where I'm going with this. The Beast is not Tyson Bagent, the Bears' backup quarterback. The Beast is Travis Bagent, the dad of the Bears' backup quarterback, who is a 28-time arm wrestling champion. I don't know what the league is called. I don't know if they have a belt with that, if there's different divisions, but he's won something in arm wrestling 28 times. So,
and Hall beat him?
Check this out, man. So, Bagent and Bagent, dad and son, were in the studios down the block at NBC Sports Chicago.
That is not a law firm, by the way.
That is not a law firm. David Haw was hosting, and he got to arm wrestle on the air. I haven't seen it. I have not been able to open it up yet. But I am told that David Haw arm wrestled him on live television and beat Travis Bagent, the beast, the 28-time arm wrestling champion. So, wow, that is historic. I cannot wait to hear reaction from David Haw on how it went down. But that's pretty impressive right there.
So David Haw's been working out.
Clearly.
Been pumping some iron.
I think Haw always stays in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but I mean,
you got to be. Yeah,
beat
you
the
be,
world champ?
Yeah, right. You better be injecting yourself with something.
Something.
To get to that point. You must have had something.
It was the Wheaties.
So congratulations to the SCORE's David Haw. Apparently a arm wrestling champion. Yes. Another thing, too, on the Bears is I was struggling today. I was watching the Cubs game. Just I devoted my sports watching day, obviously, to watching all of the Cubs game, watching with a purpose. And I'm doing other stuff, getting ready for the show. And I'm like, I know we got a couple of Bears guests on here, football guests. I'm like, what's my angle? Like, what am I thinking about here with the Bears? Where do I want to go with it? I went Carl Williams last night. I had a pretty good thing going last night. I couldn't come up with anything today because I'm trying to come up with things beyond how great everything is because it's been a blast. Look, there's enough negative to go around for everybody when it comes to the Bears because of what they do to us in past years. But there is just so much wonderful positivity with everything that the Bears have done that it is for me anyway, it has officially gotten to the point with okay, I want to see it. I want to see this thing in motion. Give me the OTAs. Give me mini camp. Give me all of training camp. Give me something because it's time. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see it. You know what it's like? It reminds me of, and I do this all the time, I buy concert tickets and maybe it's like 3 or 4 months away. So you go through the excitement. I got my tickets. I nailed them down. I know who I'm going to go with. Now you got to wait 4 months.
It's the hardest part.
Like, you're excited. You want it now. Okay, let's see it. The Bears opened their present and out came Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze, and add that to Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and Cole Kmet. It's all there. Yay, let's talk about it. Let's sing the praises of everybody. Let's have on all the coaches. Let's tell everybody how great the Bears are. And now we don't get to see anything. So And, you know, coming soon will be rookie minicamp. But you know what I mean? Like, I want the full thing. I promise you I'll come up with more Bears topics, but I'm just struggling tonight. Because of that, we're going to talk to Mike Golic Jr. next. He's got some Bears takes for me. So Mike Golic Jr. is next. I'm Mark Grody on The Score. Okay. All right. Then this will be a surprise to Alex Kuhn as well. I'm Mark Grody. That's coming up next on The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
David Haugh beat the Beast. That's right. You know who the Beast is? It's a Matt Eberflus nickname. But no, that's not where I'm going with this. The Beast is not Tyson Bagent, the Bears' backup quarterback. The Beast is Travis Bagent, the dad of the Bears' backup quarterback, who is a 28-time arm wrestling champion. I don't know what the league is called. I don't know if they have a belt with that, if there's different divisions, but he's won something in arm wrestling 28 times. So,
and Hall beat him?
Check this out, man. So, Bagent and Bagent, dad and son, were in the studios down the block at NBC Sports Chicago.
That is not a law firm, by the way.
That is not a law firm. David Haugh was hosting, and he got to arm wrestle on the air. I haven't seen it. I have not been able to open it up yet, but I am told that David Haugh arm wrestled him on live television and beat Travis Bagent, the beast, the 28-time arm wrestling champion. So, wow, that is historic. I cannot wait to hear reaction from David Haugh on how it went down. But that's pretty impressive right there.
So David Haugh's been working out.
Clearly.
Been pumping some iron.
I think Haugh always stays in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but I mean,
you got to be, yeah,
beat
you
the
be,
world champ.
Yeah, right. You better be injecting yourself with something to get to that point. You must have had something.
It was the Wheaties.
So congratulations to The Score's David Haugh, apparently a arm wrestling champion. Yes. Another thing, too, on the Bears is I was struggling today. I was watching the Cubs game. I devoted my sports watching day, obviously, to watching all of the Cubs game, watching with a purpose. And I'm doing other stuff, getting ready for the show. And I'm like, I know we got a couple of Bears guests on here, football guests. I'm like, what's my angle? Like, what am I thinking about here with the Bears? Where do I want to go with it? I went Carl Williams last night. I had a pretty good thing going last night. I couldn't come up with anything today because I'm trying to come up with things beyond how great everything is, because it's been a blast. Look, there's enough negative to go around for everybody when it comes to the Bears because of what they do to us in past years. But there is just so much wonderful positivity with everything that the Bears have done that it is for me anyway, it has officially gotten to the point with okay, I want to see it. I want to see this thing in motion. Give me the OTAs. Give me mini camp. Give me all of training camp. Give me something, because it's time. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see it. You know what it's like? It reminds me of, and I do this all the time, I buy concert tickets, and maybe it's like 3 or 4 months away. So you go through the excitement. I got my tickets. I nailed them down. I know who I'm going to go with. Now you got to wait. Now you got to wait 4 months.
It's the hardest part.
It's the hardest part. Like, you're excited. You want it now. Okay, let's see it. The Bears opened their present, and out came Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze, and add that to Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and Cole Kmet. It's all there. Yay, let's talk about it. Let's sing the praises of everybody. Let's have on all the coaches. Let's tell everybody how great the Bears are. And now we don't get to see anything. So, and, you know, coming soon will be rookie minicamp, but you know what I mean? Like, I want the full thing. I promise you I'll come up with more Bears topics, but I'm just struggling tonight. Because of that, we're going to talk to Mike Golic Jr. next. He's got some Bears takes for me. So Mike Golic Jr. is next. I'm Mark Grody on The Score.